When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now entering the DGDC.
Are you ready for a deep dive?
And Jordan did most of the crap.
Can't believe I said that.
I've been doing this in 2008. What the fuck do I know?
Drawing hands is my kryptonite.
Loading up elbow logos.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the DGDC, a united team of design professionals creatively bound to bring unique inspiration and a common perspectives. You can email us listener questions or topic ideas to hello@dgdcpod.com or check out our website, dgdcpod.com. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram or Twitter at dgdcpod. Plus now you can join in on the conversation. We have a Facebook group. Just pop onto our website and hit the community tab at the top. Now, on with the show.
All right, so we are super thankful to have Skillshare as a sponsor of this episode. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of inspiring classes for us as curious, creative individuals. This is a chance for us to discover new skills, deepen existing passions, and get lost in the world of inspiration. Skillshare offers creative classes designed for real life and so many applications that come with it. These programs can help you stay inspired, express yourself, and introduce you to a community of literally millions of people out there.
Yeah, so we picked a really great one, and kind of in line with one of our guests for Adobe Max, there's a fantastic new one by Aaron Draplin called 21 Tips for Speeding Up Your Design Workflow.
It's so great.
I watched the beginning of it, and it's so cool. It's all about designing smarter, not harder, right? Like he finds these fantastic ways to transform your work, and he broke it into three segments, and there's seven each that make up the 21, and it's tips to do before, tips to do during, and tips to do after a project. And what he really does is he deep dives into this idea of practical, actionable advice that helps you set up your Adobe Illustrator shortcuts, handy tricks, you name it. He's included a downloadable 21 tip thing so you can have it at the ready, print it out, use it. I think it's one of those must watches because even when we talked to him, he talked about his level of productivity and his level of organization. And it was such a great one. His files are so tight. His folders are all arranged beautifully. And he keeps in mind the person that's getting the files in the, like, is it the printer? Is it the client? Whoever it is. And all in all, you're just going to feel 100% more confident about handing over some of your work. So probably more than ever, why Skillshare is such an important thing to kind of look at during these times. If you have the extra time, he even mentioned it when we talked to Aaron about taking advantage of this time to be more organized. So definitely check out that episode. It's a fantastic, fantastic one.
Yeah, members get unlimited access to thousands of classes, just like Draplin's. And you get hands-on projects, feedbacks, teachers. Draplin even chimes in, lets everyone know how they're doing. And it's a huge community of millions of people and other creatives. Most classes are also pretty streamlined. Like, they're about an hour. Some are more, some are less. But they fit any schedule, and you can kind of break it up into chapters and sections, which is, I actually find really helpful because I'll go from my phone to my laptop or, you know, take a class over a weekend. And it's also, look, there's a lot of options out there, but Skillshare is really affordable, especially when it comes, you know, to the pricey in-person classes or workshops that we can kind of do. Your annual subscription is less than $10 a month, which I think fits in a lot of budgets because
it's crazy.
I mean, I use it, you know, every couple of weeks I'm taking a new class.
That's awesome. And you can explore all your creativity, everything at Skillshare.com/deepend2. The first 1,000 people to use that link will get a free trial to Skillshare Premium Membership. So we're limiting it to just the first 1,000 receive a free access to all of these thousands of classes for just a limited time and be one of the first 1,000 to sign up. Again, it's Skillshare.com/deepend2. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are here at the DGDC podcast, and today we're having a great topic following up on kind of a little bit more process stuff about revisions, changes, you name it. We're going to be talking a lot about that with client relations and stuff. I'm excited about this one because I think we've talked about it in the past before, but again, we want to like bring up these topics, right? Because they're always happening, and new listeners maybe haven't got a chance to listen to some previous ones, but we got some new tips and tricks to talk about that, how not to even get there in the first place. But before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit of industry news. We do have a public service announcement from Mikkel, because I think this is something both you and I have received, and we thought it would be worth talking about with all these other designers. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, I'm actually thankful and that I even brought it up with you, Nick, just before we started recording here, because it helps a little bit that there was a chance to relate and that you've undergone something similar. So LinkedIn, MKM Design, somebody's found MKM Design. This is fraudulent activity, people. Here we go. Here we go.
Breaking news.
And they request a large project up front. It's a project that needs to be done ASAP. Communication is a little bit not quite American English. They approve almost too quickly.
Without any other like proposal or anything, right?
Well, they also have a little bit of lingo, by the way. They're talking A4. They're talking type of binding. They're talking some specs.
God, exactly.
And I'm thinking, this might be a little bit legit here. A little bit of excitement, right? I stay up late putting the estimate together.
Yeah.
They see the full amount, are willing. However, in the communication, a couple of times now, there has been, can you do me this favor, please? Which, I'm thinking, all right, maybe they don't know the proper terminology to use here for the request.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to go there and be all, listen here, I have a business and it's not based on favors. So I'm not going there yet. Phone call, can barely make out the really thick accent, followed up by text messaging. All forms of communication are coming through way too quickly. I've blocked the contact number and still my phone is ringing with the same Wyoming-based number.
Wow, I got that one too.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
This is all too familiar.
Isn't that crazy?
Very sick.
And you say that it's basically a scam to get money in and out of some payment accounts and stuff like that.
So they mentioned that they only want to be able to pay via credit card, which isn't always a red flag. So that's why this is worth mentioning. So they're willing to make the large purchase designed to entice business so that you do in fact overlook any potential red flags so that they can pay using a stolen credit card. And then after the transaction, they will follow up claiming that the project's been canceled and ask for a full or partial refund. The catch right then and there is that they have the refund sent to a different card or they request it to be issued to a check. So, of course, it didn't get this far.
Sure.
And Jason went Google crazy yesterday looking this up for us to see that this is, in fact, how overpayment scams work.
That's
so
incredible.
Don't take the bait. They have Gmail accounts that are comprised of an American name. So in my case, yesterday and the day before, and the day prior to that, it's Mark Edward.
Yeah.
And I think for you,
I got like John Edward. You know, it was just really, and I still get them every once in a while. And I did bring this up with other designers. It's basically want design services for a furniture company doing a catalog and branding. And you're right. They mention A4 letter signs. They're very, for this brochure. Mm-hmm. But the minute I gave them my link to how you initiate a project with me, they were like, no, we just rather give you the brief via email. I was like, no. You have to qualify here. And I was really putting them to the test because I was like, okay, this is fishy now. That was the first one. Then I got, I am not kidding, I've probably got about 15 more requests just like that.
Oh,
and
no.
They find you through, they go text message from, you know when a text comes to your iMessage or whatever, but it's from an email address. So it was like that. It comes through on email. Now I'm literally just, I see that same thing, furniture company, brochure, branding. And I'm, so someone has a lot of time on their hands. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, stay clear. We've given you a warning.
Yeah, an entire scam targeting designers, man.
Yeah. Jesus. Just be, you know, sometimes too good to be true. But I get it. We were saying earlier, you know, that's the business side of us. When we see an opportunity, we're going to get excited. Yeah. Like you said, hey, this is a few grand in my pocket, maybe. Like, what a great opportunity.
This is really great quick little catches that I just want to quickly run through to avoid being deceived.
Go for it.
Be wary of anyone that offers to pay more than what you're asking. That's what happened to us. Don't forward any money to a third party. Refuse overpayments through and through. Only refund purchases onto the original card that was used.
Or a way of payment, right?
Or way of payment altogether, yep. Confirm the potential customer's information. Avoid the temptation to rush through the large and get overexcited. In my mind, I was thinking, oh my God, maybe we can go
to
Hawaii.
That's a tough one.
So sick. don't switch payment processors or sign up for a new service to make the sale work. And just be careful and caution those offering to pay for your transaction fees. So don't even blink.
Hopefully, hey, I'm so glad you brought this up right before, because we were like, why not tell everybody in case someone else is getting this or you get one in the future? Someone's taking the time to find folks like us and take advantage. Yes. So hopefully that could help everybody out. That's great. let's turn it to a positive. We've got so much good stuff coming out in the next few weeks, guys.
Oh my God.
Particularly when this episode drops. We're going to be right before Adobe Max, and Adobe Max is jam-packed with some stuff. If you haven't already, please register at it. It's adobemax.com. Basically, so much to do, 100% free. And we had to, you know, most of our listeners know we've been a part of it now for 3 or 4 years as a sponsor. But what's interesting was here it's going virtual, and they turned it around and actually made it even better for folks like us and sponsors of it. We have so much great content coming out. We have interviewed 5 unique, great artists and designers that are going to be a part of that as keynote speakers. We could preview a little bit. We've got Burt Monroy, who is the godfather of Photoshop. That was a fun episode, right?
Dude, we're going to bring him back because it was so fun. Yeah.
So great.
He'll be on we have a page basically within the Adobe Max kind of like a website, and on there will be all these interviews that we've already recorded and done with them. Hopefully we will put them on as episodes for us right now, but you can catch them first at Adobe Max. Then we spoke with Annie Adkins. That was one of the coolest ones. You might not have heard of her name, but you will know her work because she does graphic design and prop design for incredible movies that you've probably all seen. That was like one of those ones where I was like, she has the best job in our industry.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, she works with like Wes Anderson, her stuff for that was unreal.
That was great.
It's so great.
Yeah. And she was, we love people with accents. They always do better on our show. She was fantastic. We spoke with Dan Stiles, and Dan kind of has a great conversation all about kind of propaganda and art and memes and things that are happening now in our time. And it was a great eye-opening, I think, conversation for all of us to talk about and see, you know, are we designing for good? Are we designing, you know, using our powers the way we should be as designers? That was really an eye-opening one for me. For
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. The topic was so different, which was really fun.
Yeah. So good.
That was a different twist. I really appreciated that too.
Exactly. And then we have a interview from last year with Lauren Hom, and we talk a lot about putting yourself on social media, taking advantage of all these tools. You'll hear that in one as well. And Wes is a part of that one. So you'll hear him as well.
Nice.
And then last but not least, we have Aaron Draplin. You know, we've tried.
I'm sorry, who?
A guy named Aaron Draplin. he's been someone we've obviously been wanting to have on the show for so long, and wanted the right conversation, right? We love to have guests on, but you know, one thing I always loved that Wes wanted to do was if we had a guest on, there still had to be a topic that was the central nucleus of the conversation. And with Aaron, man, I don't even want to like spoil it. Just wait until you hear what we got to talk to him about. It was eye-opening, inspiring, encouraging. It was just everything. It was a great one. What'd you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, I think the legacy of Draplin, like he, you know, he delivers that story, that background, that amazing touch points he hits often. But this was fun getting to like catch him. He was just like at his mom's house on vacation. Yeah. And we just talked about things that like weren't the normal. It was.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that conversation, even beyond like the spectacle of Draplin. It was cool to catch him in that place.
And to be honest, there was no use, right? We all shared having an outline. He'll just take it away. He's just a natural. He's just a natural. And the dogs in his mom's house.
Oh my God. You could almost put it on cruise control and just be like, you know, autopilot, let's go. Like it was, he just is, you're right. I think we caught him in an interesting time, interesting environment. And it was a conversation I've never heard from him like in that way. So definitely check that out. We also have two really great blog posts. Both Jordan and Mikkel have done some, a really cool podcast. You guys want to talk a little bit about a headline of what you did?
Yeah, sure. So mine is essentially just an outlook of some overlooked tools in Illustrator that I stumbled over basically through quarantine when I started to relearn the ins and outs of Illustrator because I have more time now. and there was like, there's just some tools that I just was flabbergasted I'd never dug into or utilized. And so it's just a compiled list. Right. And we can link it in the show notes for you guys. It's live right now. But yeah, man, it's changed my process like considerably. These simple tools are just sitting there.
That's awesome. Mikkel?
Mine's due mid-month. It's still in the works.
Okay.
I'm not prepared to talk about that just yet.
She's like, I don't want to give it away, actually. That's the spin.
Yeah, and or I'm still in the process of brainstorming.
Well, by the time this comes out, listeners, well, you can go check, I guess, right now and see what this magic is.
Yeah, exactly. But we had a blast with it. I'm glad they turned this thing around. We're obviously in a weird zone where networking and conferences are being hurt so bad. So whatever we can do, I know they have a lot of cool stuff up their sleeves to help encourage you as a watcher and a participant to meet with others and find ways to connect. So great things will be happening with that. Definitely take a listen to that. We have so much good stuff coming on with that. So special thanks again to Adobe for being a part of that. Some other stuff I would say too is we've been trying to do some really good community-based stuff, and we were trying Discord, and it was kind of a little bit of we couldn't understand exactly the best way to do it. So now when you click on the subscribe button on our podcast or our website,
community?
It will take you to our community. It will take you to Facebook. And we've made a great Facebook page there. We figured you're already probably signed on there. You don't have to sign up to anything new. We're going to do our best to keep that as a great spot for any links and things that are, you know, you can't get on the show notes based on where you're listening to the podcast. So check us out there. Definitely follow us because during Max will probably be on there a lot too. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to us. Give us a 5-star. Let us know how we're doing with all of this new stuff. It's a great time to tell some other design friends about our show. If there's something you've liked, we'd love you to share it and help us out. So let's get on with our topic.
Let's do it.
All right. So we were wanting to talk about this idea of managing the design changes and the revisions. And I think it's an ever-changing, ever-growing kind of thing that we all can do. We've all been there. It's part of our process. I thought it'd be funny to talk a little bit about like things that we've done or nightmare situations in the past where the changes and the revisions got out of control, and maybe why they did. Like, I think even more importantly, before we get into how you can help stop that and manage it, what were some of the mistakes that we did, you know, back in the day that got these things into like complete nightmares, you know? Anybody, anything come to mind? You know, I mean, I can
my
go
first
back in
3 years of design. I don't know. Like.
Yeah, I was going to say it happens thankfully less than it had before in the beginning of the career.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's like, it's one of those things because I guess I liken it to like it's scope creep, right? And mm-hmm. we can put this through the filter of like revisions and all these things that they kind of really trigger with. But ultimately, like, they happen still. And I think they probably happen at the same rate as when I started. But the difference is like, I'm just more aware of them and how to handle them now. Whereas when I was younger, it was just like, sure, yeah, another revision, no mm-hmm. problem. Really quick, no problem. Like, and it took me figuring out, like, I'm doing this on every project. And then actually trying to calculate how much wasted time I'm working for free, and it was like half my work is free.
Wow.
Just for all these like little tasks. And
yeah,
you know, that conversation as a young designer, like how do you handle it, or like how do you address it, you know, is so daunting. So I think it is one of those things where, you know, it's challenging, but you get more comfortable handling it. And also you get to start like to see red flags. You set up your contracts in certain ways. We can go through all of the ways like we protect ourselves at this point. But yeah, I think starting off, man, it was just like those quick things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I could look back and say it was just not being prepared, not being organized.
Sure.
Not doing agreements, not... And yet you're still in those zones. I was in 2 to 3 cycles of that with a clients at the same time and wondering why it wasn't streamlined. What was I doing wrong? You know, and I think for a long time too, you just think you've never set it up for success even at the beginning. So
yeah.
I'd sit there and go like, what is wrong? Why can't they see my way? What, you know, like, and I had to change my entire I guess, direction and perspective from this thing, because I had a few times where I was doing this and it was like, I had a few that were, they ended in so badly that it was a walk away. It was like a, we parted ways because no one could understand what was going on. I wasn't, and I'll be the first to admit, I probably wasn't being that flexible, because after a certain point, you kind of go like, what do you want? Like,
right.
And then, right. And right. Then I realized I didn't ask that at the very beginning.
Yeah. I know. It's a little like parenting. A lot of it stems from you.
Oh,
that's actually a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our job to sort of create and manage the project and set the expectations. And I think ultimately it just comes from like, from just like not setting those boundaries as early on.
Right.
And then just not being super transparent and clear about the project, which again.
And lacking confidence. So
My God.
They all mesh together.
I know. It's the triple storm. what do you guys do to help understand the client and even more, sometimes more importantly, the project at hand? Like, what are those things you do up front that maybe help you set a better goal right from the very beginning? You know, top line stuff.
Well, do you think like, because it kind of comes in stages where sometimes, at least at this point in my career, like, there's red flags before we even start to get to the project. Even like those first couple emails, I'm like,
yeah.
Because again, like
they want a furniture brochure.
Yeah, but like, you know, I guess my question is like, I assume you guys are in this boat. Like, can you spot it before the project starts? Right. And
right.
I think it's harder to identify, and that comes with just like more experience as you get on. But at least for me, like, I can gauge a lot about a potential client through those first few emails. You know, if they like already heavily focusing on like how many options, revisions, or price, if they're just like not open to the project and more like these like, you know, very specific areas.
Yeah.
To me, that means like, okay, they're very particular. I have to make sure going forward that I'm going to lay out everything very clear of the project and what we're going to do, just because they're already seeming like this could end up being a potential like, you know, funnel of just scope creep or endless revisions.
Yeah.
And so... I think it does start with like identifying those first few emails of whether or not they, but you know, that's not, you know, a hard and fast rule.
Oh, and that's
I've been
so hard.
Many times.
And it's so for hard sure. for us to, they're all
no,
different.
No
right?
two are the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you gotta be a little flexible on that too, but you're right. I think a red flag will pop up, you know, and that could be your first sign, but like Raquel, anything specific you do to get a more solid idea of, I mean, is it, you know, better questionnaire, more upfront stuff? What do you do to better align?
I definitely add weekly roundup meetings of at least 3 at the beginning phase with stakeholders, important team members, for them to be a part of this too, and take advantage of that time frame to ask this what might be deemed silly or stupid questions that are elementary level.
Yeah.
You know, I'm brand new. I don't know anything about you. What's the first thing? You pitch me your product. Let's schedule a time where you treat me like the customer and I want you to pitch me the product. And I've learned in proposals and estimate documentation to underscore no more than 2 rounds max. If it exceeds that, we revisit the scope and the estimate bounds altogether.
Good.
Because, or whatever number it is. I just threw that out there on the fly. That really protects you and your team members.
Yeah. I love that you said make them pitch it to you. Like, in some ways, that happens in my process, but I'd ask them straight out, like, here's your chance. Like, before we work together, I want to see what your pitch is for this project or this particular thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
Well, that's going to tell you a lot, at least with, like, yeah. If it's a brand, like, and they have to discover and figure out the whys, like, yeah. That's a good place to figure out where they're at and then where you need to kind of come in and, like, okay, so there's this brand is, like, brand new and, like, we don't really have a direction. We're going to have to bump some more time into discovery, likely. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Versus, yeah. like, someone who's got a really good concept and they're going straight
yeah.
forward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think you kind of both touched, like, the contract is kind of where it all happens. Like, it all comes down to the contract. You know, you can, again, you can find the red flags or you can kind of figure it out beforehand. But ultimately, like, the contract is that written agreement that you and the client are going to both agree upon, and then it's going to lay yeah. everything out. So later on, it can be your scope gate, it's your defender. Mm-hmm. And I know you've probably talked about contracts in the past, but maybe it'll be good just be like how we actually utilize it in relation to, like, this kind of scope creep, these endless revisions.
Yeah.
And how, you know, I've added things to my contract just later on because of scenarios that happened specifically with scope creep, all these, like, little add-ons. I'm like, I'm always getting asked to do these. I'm going to add them to my contract.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately, like, the first step is just being super clear and transparent and breaking everything down and using very clear, direct language.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, lay out exactly what you guys are agreeing on.
Yeah.
And just yeah. break everything down that way.
And this is a great opportunity to kind of link back to our proposal episode, because
yes.
my proposal and agreement are really fusing together in a way. And I'm realizing probably why. It's because just as important as are the contents of your agreement on, like, let's say, and we'll get into this, but, you know, how many revisions, the cost, the timelines, and all of that stuff. What mm-hmm. I feel is more important and what will eliminate the changes better is a more clear version of the path we're on for the brand itself. And what are the objectives? What is the answer? How are we going to do it? All those things we talked about, to me, I think are the things that are eliminating even having to go back and use your agreement as a tool to stop them, right? Like, hey,
yeah.
you're at your limit. I don't even want to get to that conversation. I want to nail it because we've done more, like, up front,
yeah.
you know? And so maybe this is something we each do custom-wise as far as how you fuse these things together. Because you're right. Let's face it. The signed agreement, 9 times out of 10, is the reason someone is in revision hell, right? Because they yeah. didn't do it.
Because they did, exactly. And we've all been then, we'll get into, I think, those situations where if you find yourself
yeah.
without that, what to do. Because there are still things, you know, you can kind of take on. But I think a good first step is also, like, understanding that there's no ill will or, like, the client isn't, I mean, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they're not just, like, a selfish asshole. Yes, you'll find one in the bunch, right? That's just trying to,
yeah.
like, make more money, get the bang for the buck. But I find the vast majority of time, you know, when scope creep happens, it's not really intentional. It's usually just a result of, like, an uninformed client.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, some clients just don't know what they want. And so as we progress, like, through the project, like, maybe they develop some new ideas they want to explore. That's super common, I find. Like,
yeah.
oh, you know what? We've done all this discovery work. I know we talked about 2 revisions or 2 options, but I'd love to have a third with this new idea we're talking about, which I don't think that's a bad thing. I encourage that because it usually means, like, I can, you know, upsell for that kind of stuff.
True.
We can get into, right. like, the benefits of the scope creep and how you can take advantage of it, right, where you can make
yeah.
money. But I think, yeah, the first stage is, like, yeah, I wouldn't come at it like the clients being, you know, malicious in any way. I think they're just uninformed.
True.
So, like, help me get to that place. Like,
I like the idea of, like, you were saying, 2 sometimes sounds too little.
Yeah.
3 sounds better. And you're right. It means for a little bit more. That's extra time and more money in your pocket in this, you know.
I'm curious, you know, let's yeah. talk specific just revisions and just, I'm just
go
curious you guys' process.
Yeah, let's do it.
And we've had this conversation where, like, I like to do, like, 1 option, maybe 2 revisions.
Oh, yes.
It's not always the case. That's my goal. And that's usually what I try to get to. But I know some people that have, like, just these package deals, and that seems to work pretty well too, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
your 1, 2, 3 option plus 3 revision deal. And then they base their pricing around that. But I'm just curious kind of how you guys handle that part of the scope. Because when I started off, like, I just didn't know what was, like, the best number to mm-hmm. add, right? Because, like, yeah, two sounds like maybe two sounds too little, or three seems like a good number, but that's a lot of
yeah.
just, like, totally different options, directions.
Yeah.
Curious how you guys handle that. What do you do?
Yeah, I require it to be renditions of the existing work provided. And if they're not renditions and it feels like a start over from point zero.
Better word. Rendition.
That is a much better word.
I love that.
Yeah, because options could be so like, hey, these need to be distinctly different.
If it's based off of a current design, it's a rendition.
And it used to be from...
Damn, Mikhail, that's... I'm writing my pen.
Gold. That's making it to the video reel.
And it used to be that three was the magic number, right? You have one conservative direction, one that's edgy, bold, whatever, a little bit far out, and then one that's a little bit in between, right? A marriage between the two.
Like the mild to wild.
A mild to wild, and now I'll have them decide that mild to wild at round two. I'll do just the two.
Smart. Distinct. Yeah.
And that keeps things minimal. They see that you can provide a real distinct selection at the very beginning for round one. And mm-hmm. That way, and oftentimes round two is a little bit more predictable in that sense because mm-hmm. you're going to marry.
Yes. And you have some sense of what road they want to be on. So now it's helping your design out.
Yes.
And it's perfect because like the reason why I usually try to stick to one option, which I kind of do that same thing with like an option with like some variety or some alts.
Cool.
Because you do all that discovery up front work, like you have the direction. If you do that work up front, you kind of know what it's going to end up being because you figured out the who, the what, the direct, you know, the personality, the pillar, the values. You're putting all that stuff into this ID. You know, usually it's like if I go too distinctly different, they feel too separated from that core. So,
mm-hmm.
but the rendition is brilliant because that still gives them options. And clients, at least when you're having this upfront conversations, like they want to know there's going to be options. Like sometimes when I say, hey, we're going to stick with one direction and then we'll do some alts with it. They're like, well, we'd love to see, you know, a few concepts, but, and this is giving that without having to do like three distinctly different, you know, brand directions.
Yes. Yeah. Three doesn't feel so magic anymore. I do really love abiding to two distinct.
Yes.
Mm.
That's where I think I've gotten to. I just had this conversation with someone yesterday who goes to the one and does so much up front, kind of similar mm-hmm. to what you were talking about, Jordan. And it's true. Like, I think I've narrowed down from what I used to do back when it was like sometimes eight. And you're like, who are you? What were you thinking? Right? Like, it's just the worst. And it meant, again, we weren't doing enough of the upfront, right? So now when we know where they want to be, one, two is actually quite doable. I think one thing you brought up, Mikhail, that is so important to think about is revisions and renditions. The difference of this idea that if options are shown and it's back to square one, meaning like nothing jived, nothing went right, that's probably one red flag number one. Like if you haven't had one already.
Totally agree.
Maybe this isn't going the right, and it could be a deal breaker. But make sure, and I think there's a line in my contract that says something about that it has to be based off of the options we showed with a rendition or a tweak rather than the square one. So finding a way in your own language to talk about that, because I think a lot of young designers that dabble in freelance will go in very unstable and unconfident just because of their level. It's not their fault, but the client will say like, I don't think we're here yet. Go back, try it again. Like, no.
Well, and if you're dealing with a new client, especially, right? Like it feels like you have to be more transparent or educational at that point where mm-hmm. you're breaking things down or like, this is what we consider revision or rendition. Like you have to really define that with them, I find.
Yeah.
And so when the terms are crystal clear from the start, I just think it significantly reduces any chance of that scope creep down the road. And and ultimately, like absolutely. 90% of that creep always happens with like these like small, you know, revisions or
startups.
Hey, can you just change that?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, especially like the smaller clients, they just need, again, it's not, I don't expect them to know the process. They're coming to me. They're coming to us to figure
absolutely.
That out.
Absolutely. You know? There's a lot of education that happens.
Exactly.
But man, like young designer me, it's like that was always a sense of anxiety and a headache. It's just like, man, I'm not.
Me too.
And my frustrations just came from like, I'm not making money. Like my value is being underappreciated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was my fault for not setting that expectations or like, here's how the process works.
Isn't it true? This is all comes in hindsight though. When you're in that moment. Yeah. You don't know until you know.
You got to get stung before you know how to make a swift change, you know?
That's exactly.
and unfortunately, like, and I've seen that happen in a lot of designers, and it's like, well, now you care because it hurt, you know? And, and again, all this advice is just really to help you kind of hopefully not get there in the first place, but it's going to happen. You know, it's still new things happen to us on a daily basis that make you shift and change and reflect, you know, when you guys do the bit, let's say it's now additional stuff or how you're wording it correctly in this agreement. I know when I say, in particular, like a logo design, once that comp is given and I'm hoping it really connects and it's everything there, the tweaks and changes and renditions are probably a great way to say it. And then I will put that in there as almost like rounds rather than revisions, because it's like all to come up with the most final and approved and sign off logo. Like,
oh,
I think sometimes
interesting, because I always use those two terms together, revision rounds.
Good.
But you don't. You think there's a distinction between the two.
Yeah, I think like a revision means I didn't get it right.
Mm.
And I've got, and I think this is coming up in like in this education part that we want to talk about like educating the client right. But a revision, you got to ask what we think about what a revision is and what a client thinks a revision is.
Yes, so, that's a good point. Because to me, right. I don't see it as, I see it as updates.
Or tweaks and final adjustments. They might see it as this didn't work. Like, you know what I mean? And it goes back to that overhaul or back to square one thing. We never want to, that's not the case. And if it ever has to, your contract has to say, well, then you pay me for the work that was done and we restart this program all over again or we part ways.
Yeah. Right?
You can't have both.
And that's like, going even back to the contract where you said to break stuff down, because again, it's all in that breakdown where you go through it with them and what you're laying out, everything that's going to happen. And so anything beyond that, it's easy to go back to the contract and be like, hey, you know, we're getting outside the scope that we agreed upon. We'll figure it out. But, you know, moving on from that, like, and since I've started just adding those like little extras that I continuously get asked that ended up being like, hey, this is another hour or two of my work. It seems like a small ask, but it's frequent. And so like beyond the basics, I just find like a lot of the scope group can come from those like little nuanced particulars. And so I have a section now of just like, you know, your sort of add-on asks or charges or whatever, put them in, just like this, an addendum of these extras. Right.
Hmm.
And I think by outlining those smaller tasks in this proposal, I think one, it not only gives you opportunity to like upsell, but also it helps set expectations with the client. So when they see those things broken down, they immediately will understand like, oh, okay, so any extra work, obviously we're going to have to revisit and look for.
Yeah.
Even if they don't need them, they're just seeing like those extra details. For me, it was like, I always get like, you know, hey, can you crop this out for like a social media for Insta Story, Instagram, Facebook? Like, okay, that's six crops that all will require rearranging for like whatever some illustration I did.
Mm-hmm.
That's not part of the agreement we had. You know, it seems easy. Can you just, you know, crop those out? But that's like an hour of work sometimes. So
yeah,
I have that now in like social media management or like various crops. These are add-ons they can bring into. So when they ask, we're like, yeah, we can revisit the contract. No problem. I find that super helpful. And at least for me, where a lot of those, like just like those small asks that maybe aren't always revisions or, you know, options come from.
I can see how that advice would change mine, where my last bullet point in changes might say, and any additional stuff is obviously subject to a whole other, you know, other additional fees. It sounds like what you've done is you made that a new header, like a new section saying add-ons.
Yeah. Just because there are things that I get, it's pretty frequent that I get asked to do that aren't in, you know, that aren't in the agreement. I just want to make sure we're setting those. Again, expectations at the start of that, everything is agreed upon beforehand. Before we start, we're covering everything. And then, if, you know, should the needs arise for some sort of little ask, then
yeah,
not a problem. We can definitely, and I encourage, I want, you know, I'd love the upsell. It's great. It doesn't make me frustrated anymore. Scope creep is like, I capitalize on that. It's really helpful.
Yeah. If here's a question. So let's say a listener or a younger designer is testing the waters on this, right?
Yeah.
And they're putting all this together and whatever. What other advice would you give them on, you've done it in the actual thing. How do you communicate it better now if you've never done it before to the client live? Like, what, you know, walking them through this, do you take the time to get on the phone with them and do that? You know, how do you make them confident in doing this? Because I think that's the biggest hurdle.
Not to cheapen the circumstance, but you know what a good analogy of this to me is if any time I'm on the plane or at a restaurant or sitting at a bar and somebody is transparent up front and says, this is my second day, bear with me. Mm-hmm. I'm just learning the ropes and thank you so much for your patience. And what I think, what I would suggest, blah, 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 I can't appreciate that more. I love that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's any issue. It's wonderful what comes from transparency.
True.
Especially when it starts with you. So you will find that that's greatly respected. And sometimes it initiates that collaboration rather than you pointing your finger and saying, here's what I think we should do. It helps that teamwork kick into gear, and together you and that point of contact for the client start to really work together as team.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
I think
because everyone's gonna, you don't do this automatically. This happens new, and it's something you're adding to maybe your process. So don't feel like it's what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I think don't feel like it's too pushy or too overwhelming. They've probably already gone through this before with another vendor in some way, right?
Yeah, and so, perhaps so. Yes, so that's a good point.
So the way you introduce it is, it's all for the, I think it too, if you add to that, it's all for the better of the project and our working relationship.
Well, and it's good business. Like, I think
clients, it is good business. It's honest, good business.
Yeah, and businesses, you know, I think have a found respect for other businesses that treat themselves like a business. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think
totally.
Taking the emotions out, like if you're making business decisions, there's respect on both sides. You know, I guess our job is tougher, and it took me a long time to figure out, like, you know, we're different because we're building a relationship where it's less of a commodity and more like, hey, we're learning about you as a person, as a business, like your hopes and dreams. And we're translating these ideals visually oftentimes. So like there's that level of like, man, we're building this relationship, and it's really set on like trust.
Yeah.
And I think trust really comes when like you set expectations and you're super clear and
okay. I oftentimes hear from the client, whether it's during the project or following completion, that's why they prefer to opt for independent practices as opposed to firms.
Yeah.
Is to have that true nature of a trustworthy relationship that's established, and perhaps a friendship along the way. It's interesting what can kind of stem from these projects, right?
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself on the phone a little bit longer. You find yourself getting to know family members that mm-hmm. you wouldn't have expected
yeah.
the time you sent the proposal. It's really sweet. It's really mm-hmm. sweet. I think that there's an upper hand to that.
And that they could be a referral client at that point, because now you've just
yes. And that word of mouth travels so quickly once there's that special relationship anyway.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually not a standard. Big point, right? Like
that's not standard with a firm or an agency.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, because ultimately, like, look, when all is said and done, and even if you have to have those hard conversations, like it's still important to keep the client happy. In the long run, because for me, most of my work comes from referrals at this point, which is mm-hmm. which is kind of where you want to get,
because
it's just like it's just like passive, you know, clients. I guess most of my work is from retaining work, which is, I think, like that's job security. I love that, but that just comes from like finding the great clients and then sticking with them.
But your reputation with them has been broadened and strengthened because of these tools, right? So like I always tell someone who's a little afraid to maybe push this and hasn't done it before, this is the building blocks of your reputation. This is what you become known for.
I love that.
Down the road. And if that means more targeted, more upfront for a better result, that's making the process 10 times better and easier for that particular client. Again, what are they going to do after that? They're going to refer you. They're going to sing your praises. They will write a testimonial for you.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're building that. And you, to be honest with you, you have more to lose if you don't do this.
Well, that's like, right. I think there's a lot of, yeah. If you're sort of in the position of continuously stuck in scope creep or, you know, it's a pattern, it's not the client, it's kind of your process. And so you, and everyone figures it out, like, but
for sure,
I'd like to bring up a topic where, and this was kind of where I found myself a lot. And I think a lot of listeners are probably at this position where, okay, so you're in the middle of this project. What do you do if you find yourself in that position where it's just like this client or, and you know, it's a pattern of clients and they keep asking for these like specific changes or like you're in the scope pre-tunnel, you know, how do you address it when you don't have that specific language like in your contract?
Or maybe so let's say it's gone off the rails, right? This is
that. And you can't just go back to the contract because that's what I do at this point, right? We're all like, hey, let's go back to the contract and talk about the agreement. But man, if you didn't put that in there, what do you do? And because there's still ways to address it, right? And I think maybe the first one might be like evaluate the ask. Like, what are they asking first, right?
Yes.
If they're asking something that might be just a quick fix or like it won't sap your time to complete, you know, or are they asking for like a full another revision or local option? Like, I think first is figuring out what works for you and if it's something you're willing to put the extra time in. But I'd say it's a rocky road, or just be careful if you, like, you find yourself again in that place more where you are doing these quick fixes because they start to add up. And it might not be one client. For me, I was like, I'm doing this across the board. I'm losing a day a week on not making any money for my time.
Yeah.
And so I think figuring out what that ask is. And ultimately, I think we'll do it, right? Like, if they're asking, hey, can you just, like, you know, change this color to this palette really quick. Like, fine, okay, that'll take me 10 minutes. But then I think it's important to, like, let them know that this is a charge or something that would have been in the contract. Mm-hmm. Something like, you know, hey, I don't mind knocking this out for you right now real quick, no problem. But, you know, just let you know this is usually something we charge for. And so if you want to talk about what that might be, like, you know, you can add it to the contract. So, like, letting them know you're going to do it for them for free, you're making the extra step, right? And then also informing them these are, you know, typically...
That's a good balance because it shows that you're compromising in some way and you're saying, that's not a problem. Like, that's great. We can do that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And ensuring that you're not bending over and in the very beginning doing a solid that could set expectation for later. Mm-hmm. I've always been so overcognizant about how quickly I might deliver the first round of deliverable. Mm-hmm. If there's a good happy medium, or if I delivered it pretty quickly, then you might F yourself later because there's that expectation ongoing.
Good point.
That you'll turn it over quickly. So I try to run a happy medium there, which is not easy. It's easier to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And having that conversation, you know, especially when I started with just like, am I being passive aggressive when I say they ask me for something? I'm like, you know, usually this content is additional service, but we can do it for you now. Like, does it sound mean? But ultimately, I don't think it does. And I think 9 times out of 10, they're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, seldom do you have a client be like, this is fucking bullshit. Like, it doesn't happen.
Right.
They're usually like, oh, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. Like, I'd love to go forward with this. But so I think, like, evaluating that ask is always, you know, step one. If you don't have that language, you can still have that conversation.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, or renegotiate, I guess, maybe. Like,
true.
Right? This sort of.
That's first stage if it's going nowhere.
Yeah, I just mean, like, if it's a task that you're unwilling to do for free, right? Like, if it's a big ask, then it's time to renegotiate.
Yeah.
Which is always my white whale as a young designer. Like, I just instinctively avoid conflict for the most part. So, like, the idea of asking for more money for something I love doing, it was just like a nightmare, right? But again, it's never as bad as you think it's going to be. And more often than not, the client is, like, super okay with it. Or if they're not, like, they come to the realization they don't need what they asked for real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a few projects where I had to almost put the changes and the revisions at one point in two columns. One of them was just the concern of the place. So I had a client where we had to differentiate the changes. One side were just the nitpicky personal, almost he was just scared to release the art and wanted to like, it's like, should we make the organic logo bigger? I'm like, it's already fine. It won't make a difference.
Make the logo bigger.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then the other ones were actual technical things that had to be changed in either the ingredients or like the nutritional facts. So I separated the two, and on the first side I said, absolutely no. I'm laying the law down, dude. It will not make a difference. Stop. Right. And he was like, okay, you had to tell me that. And it worked, right? Mm-hmm. And the other side was like, hey, as these continue to change, we have a number of SKUs. I have 15 different files. Those changes do, I had to explain to him the timing and how that adds up. So they were fine in saying like additional changes after that. You know, we were in round 9, I think, at a certain point. But that he had no other choice on those. That was a make or break change because of legal and other stuff. So you gotta weigh the options, you know?
Yeah. And I find like those situations where it comes down to having to draw the line are pretty rare. And ultimately, like usually if I try to renegotiate, that's usually where I think I can usually try to fix the situation, right? And ultimately, like if you're having trouble trying to figure out like how to phrase something or like, hey, they're asking for, I'll use social media. They're asking for all these social media crops again.
Yeah.
I think I find it helpful if you just give them the feedback in a form of a choice, let them choose like, hey, you know, this ask, this additional social media assets is a bit of out of our agreement, but I'm more than happy to add it to our contract, you know, for blank amount. And we can get this in the works right now. Boom, you're giving them a choice, or we can stick to like the original agreement. And then you give them a choice. And I think it's like a low pressure way to let them know that your time is valuable and you're still respecting their position by letting them choose.
Yes.
That I think helps a ton. Just that phrasing of like letting them choose is usually a nice, easy route to soften that blow. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes you have to draw the line.
I know.
And it's scary and it's tough, but like, but ultimately it's a good thing. Like you don't want to waste your time with that kind of client because it's taking away time that you could be with a really good project client.
Yeah. But you know, shutting it down and being, we're very friendly. And I was like, dude, no, I was like, and so the next he tested the waters again, next time. And he's like, I know you're going to say no, but what do you think about this? And I was like, what do you think my answer is going to be? And so it kind of tamed the conversation and he finally had the trust now. And I was like, it won't make or break this product in this thing. And we got to get these done by a certain time. So I think, again, all of these things play into the factor timeline, your agreement, your conversations, your communication, over communicate, do all these things up front. I think for sure that helps lessen the chances of this ever happening for you.
Well, and you don't have a business until you treat it like a business. And those conversations, they're not based on emotion or desire. It's like, want to be liked. It's just good business.
Exactly.
And I think you can't really argue with that. I think ultimately, if there's any piece of advice, like the success of a freelance or you as a freelancer solely depends on you. And so if something's not working, change your process.
Yeah.
I think 9 out of 10 times, everyone will be okay with it. It's not as scary as it seems. Most clients are very reasonable people and they just don't know the process.
Yeah.
So scope creep can only really happen if you don't recognize when it's happening and you don't address it. If you don't, then it's going to happen. And if you don't protect your time and your business, like who will? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so like those are those hard lessons where, you know, if you address it, you can treat the symptoms. It's always going to be there. You can't cure scope creep, but you can definitely treat it.
Yeah. there's
that.
The tagline of the episode. I love it. Yeah.
That is going to be the call out quote of my upcoming Adobe Max.
Hell yeah.
Done deal. Killed two birds with one stone.
Love that.
I love it.
That's way better than rendition.
All right. Well, let's hope this helped you guys out a little bit more on that. Definitely feel free to add any content, any questions to the social media stuff that we'll be putting out on this episode as well. Hope it helps in the long run. All right, guys. So we have our second round of shout outs. This is where we get to talk about something really cool happening. And Cass, it doesn't even have to be about design. It could be just something inspiring us all. Jordan, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. My shout out this week is it's a man named Stephen Geralt. Man, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his last name.
That's okay.
It's outside the realm of design, but I can't really imagine anyone finding or not finding a spark of inspiration by what he's doing. Again, his name's Steve Geralt, S-T-E-V-E-G-I-R-A-L-T. I would recommend everyone just going to his Instagram right now. He calls himself a visual engineer, and he creates these like unreal, these absolutely incredible videos using all sorts of like robotic tools and motion mechanics to capture scenes that I don't think have ever been captured outside of like CG, 3D, you know, 3D.
Wow.
Like, and it's all real. You've probably seen some of his clips out there. He's kind of gone viral a few times, like the one where like it was the s'mores with the Hershey's bar kind of folding in on itself, like all these cool little tricks. I guess it's hard to convey how awesome these videos are, but I think the most captivating aspect is seeing like behind the scenes. So if you go to his Instagram, you can see like these videos he's done, and then you can see his setup and how it's like coming together with all these like awesome robots making these like incredible videos. So definitely check him out on Instagram. It's worth any follow. I'm glued to it. Like every week he comes out with a video, and it's so good.
Love hearing stuff like that. Mine is tech. I'm a sucker for this crap, but I have found the ultimate mouse. I'm showing it as a visual, but if you guys want to check it out, it's made by Logitech. It's called the MX Master 3, and then they have a whole MX series. They even have one that's an anywhere one that's great for on the go. But man, I've never invested in anything good when it comes to a mouse. I think I had an old one that was lingering around for a while. And thanks to our buddy Ryan Wheaton, who in a chat, I think just said like, check out the Logitech one. And next thing I know, I'm picking it up at Best Buy, and I have been in love with this thing. It is so programmable. Super precise. It looks like a sports car. It looks like a car design. It's just ridiculous. And it's so cool. And it's not even a sponsor. I just love it. To me, it's one of those things. It's like your chair. It's like your desk. It's like one of those things. It's such an extension of you. Get the one you really like, or go test drive a new mouse somewhere. Walk around a Best Buy and try it.
I'm glad you mentioned this, because I would remember when I was texting you, I had carpal tunnel. I had a bad case of carpal tunnel, and I needed to just step away from the fancy white polished magic mouse with Apple and get something that raises my hands together.
And it has such a high
ergonomic profile.
It's retrained like how it is, and I can already feel the difference. I wasn't using the magic mouse, but I know what you mean.
Yes.
It's so nice. Again, a great upgrade that we can all do. What keyboard you're using, all those little things. Like, I think it's always cool to kind of reevaluate where you're at with all those things. So, Mikkel, what do you got?
All right. So, this one's kind of funny, a little bit silly. and serves Jason, my husband, just to a T. He asked earlier this morning when we were walking to bring Oakley to the bus, can you give me a shout out on your show today?
I think that's amazing.
That's amazing.
It's super cute and weak at the same time. So everyone out there, it's Jason's big 5-0 birthday today.
Happy birthday, dude. Amazing.
Yeah,
that's
so it's great. Really great. And a big mixed bag of emotions, because his dad has passed and today is his dad's birthday as well. So we are celebrating both individuals for sure.
That's always the best way to look at it, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I love that.
Jason doesn't look like, he doesn't look a day over like 30. Like, he's a good looking 50-year-old. He said he's turning 50.
I do forget as well. He's very young at heart. I think that's why this works. But
that's so cool.
That's when shit just gets started. I could never go back. I mean, I'm in my 40s. It just keeps getting better. I loathe people that say, I'm so old. I feel so old. Get over it. There's nothing you can do about it. Enjoy it.
Enjoy. Yeah, exactly. That's so cool. What are the plans for today? You guys doing anything special?
Well, this is cool. Since we've been recording, my mom and I have been texting back and forth. She wants to get us our favorite Thai takeout for dinner tonight. So she's going to have that delivered.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is great. And one of his twin boys is showing up as a surprise later this evening, unexpected, and and we've got our nanny here today, and I asked her to stay a little bit later so I can take him out for a stiff drink.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah. Hell yeah. Cheers from us.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's sweet.